Code 1, civil priority. Isolation now in effect. To avoid the risk of contamination, please stay indoors and await further instructions.
Well, hello there again in Tribe World. It's Ray here. I hope you're all keeping well and staying safe and staying indoors for those who are on lockdown. And it's a pleasure to bring you another podcast. And I'm joined this morning by one of your very favorite characters and a terrific young man, a great guy. So join me in welcoming Mike Wesley Smith, better known to all of you Tribe fans as Jack, and for Atlanta Side fans as Giles. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Ray. And look, I just wanted to send out a really warm hello to everyone listening. Although it's been some time since my hair was red, it remains long in the memory, and it's just fantastic to be able to have the opportunity to, you know, revisit a really special time in my life, and have another connection with all the audience that used to tune in and are now tuning into this podcast.
That's great, Mike. You're in Wellington right now. You're in New Zealand, obviously.
Yes, I'm back where I grew up after spending time in London and in Auckland in my travels, but I'm back with my young family living in Wellington and being closer to mum and dad and all my brothers and sisters.
That's nice. And Mike, a lot of your fans and brothers and sisters in Tribe World will be intrigued. You're now a dad and you've got a lovely little girl.
I am, yes. Her name is Evelyn, and she's not yet, I think she can say no and the word bath.
I was saying, you know, with this all, you know, stranded at home, for me, I'm used to being a writer working at home, and my daughter's first words were, "Shush, Daddy's working," you know?
I wonder if my daughter will add that to her vocab, but my wife Lucy is... she's been balancing work and being a full-time mum, and so she's been fantastic. And it's interesting. One of the silver linings, I suppose, of this lockdown has been able to spend an extended period at home with my wife and my daughter. So,
nice. And what do you do all day to occupy yourself? Do you watch TV or read? Or
I mean, I've been able to work. I've got a little office here at home, so during the day, that's what I've been occupying myself with. And but otherwise, you know, I obviously get to have lunch and dinner with my wife and daughter, and we try and get out once a day at least to walk the dog. I have a little miniature poodle called Wally.
Oh, nice. And that's and you obviously keep it's interesting, isn't it, when you go walk around the block and you keep your social distancing and all this kind of stuff. I wonder, it's a very weird existence. And who would have thought, Mike, when we did The Tribe all those years ago, that we're almost, as I always say, living in an episode of it now, isn't it?
Look, it was very prescient, right? It has to be said.
Yeah.
I was, when we first reconnected, I mentioned to you, my wife had kind of mentioned half jokingly, that it, you know, did remind her of, you know, the circumstances in the tribe storyline, and certainly for me, on reflection, you know, I just have those memories of the opening credits and that scene where Robin, who was obviously an assistant director, is, you know, he's in that Hazcam suit and he's looking at files, and
you know, it's interesting. I mean, one of our writers, David Fox, who did a great job on episode one, sent in a script, and I had to, it was great, but there was a few elements missing, and so I had to write a couple of scenes. And the very first scene in The Tribe, which was actually filmed near my own house up in Whitby, through the loudspeaker, where they were saying, you know, code one, isolation now in effect. And little did we know that all these years later, I'm stranded out here in Australia, isolated, and as I've said, looking for toilet paper, you know. So it's all sold out over here, you know. And what about in New Zealand? Are you getting groceries all right, and you've got some supplies?
Yeah, well, firstly, I suppose I should or maybe I speak for both of us, Ray, when I say at least this virus is okay on adults as opposed to the one in the tribe. We're probably outside that age group now, both of us.
That's right.
It's been relatively pretty good over here. I mean, I think my most recent trip, I had to line up at a safe distance, but for the most part, the shelves were pretty well stocked. And I have to confess, when the lockdown was first announced, I was kind of half thinking of, I was halfway out the door trying to do a panic buy, and my wife made me see sense and said, no, stop right there.
That's good. You've got a good lady there to keep you grounded. I'm the same, actually, that I've just locked onto this toilet paper. Nowhere in Australia can you get toilet paper. And you have visions. I mean, where masks I can understand, but, the toilet paper, if you're like the Invisible Man, I keep having this image of people being wrapped up in toilet paper, and the coroner, the virus will think, oh, I'm not going to venture near him, So, Mike, you mentioned you were in London. How long were you in the UK for?
So I went there in mid-2009, which was kind of prompted by the traditional overseas experience that you have in New Zealand after a few years in the workforce. And I ended up being there until early 2012.
Wow. And what did you do there? I mean,
I principally worked as an employment law paralegal. So was working on, cases where, somebody was talking about maybe being unfairly dismissed. And so I did that for the bulk of the time that I was in London. And then what prompted the move back was I decided that, I felt a career change was in order. So I went to broadcasting school, and that was the beginning of about 4 or 5 years working as a journalist, principally in television and then at TV3. And actually, now I think about it, Ray, probably the last interview I did with Tribe World was actually when I was living in England. Maybe being with yourself, actually.
It's interesting, Mike, because the looking back on that, and you may or may not be aware that. And so for the fans and the people, for our listeners, that Mike obviously was at school and still in education when we were filming The Tribe. And post The Tribe, your mum and dad asked me what my advice was, because they said that they were worried for you to, pursue acting, and they thought you should get a career like a lawyer or a doctor or whatever. And I said to them, I said, look, obviously, you do what you think is right, but my experience has been Mike is you're a very creative being, Mike, and I said that, and a very bright man, I have to say, but I'm sure you could sail through university and get your law degree, but creativity is like a niche that needs to be scratched. And so I wasn't surprised, to be honest, that you, for the listeners, that they'll be intrigued to know that Mike became a lawyer, eh, Mike? And you studied law.
Yeah.
What area of law did you specialise in?
Yeah, I ended up specialising in criminal law, actually. And main reason for that was when I went to law school, I wanted to make sure, well, for me, in terms of my personality, it suited more to have as much contact with people as I could. And doing criminal law for the period that I did it, I got a real insight into, the different ways that some people, the different backgrounds that some people have had. There's a lot more complexity around why people end up in court than maybe is apparent to those who fortunately don't have that experience. And it really opened my eyes to a whole range of social issues that I maybe wouldn't have ever had otherwise. People who, struggle with some of the issues that actually, we touched on The Tribe, actually, if I think about it. So, I mean, it's interesting you recall that conversation with Mum and Dad. I mean, I remember Mum saying to me that you know, education will always be there, but opportunities like participating in the tribe won't be. And, you know, I still remember it was her advice for me to avail myself as much as I could and partake in the tribe as much as was possible. And yeah. I was really, really glad that she gave me that advice. And obviously, you know, people who watch the tribe will know that, you know, there were some of the series where I was away for large chunks of the time. And I was always thankful that the creative writing staff and yourself, Ray, were able to work that into the storyline. And
yeah, Mike, you were always a big part of the family and the Cloud9 family and the tribe family. And we go back to, I first met you as a little boy, not me as a little boy, you as a little boy, when you were in The Legend of William Tell. Yeah, and did you always have an acting bug, Mike? Something you wanted to do, or just how did that come about?
It's a very good question. I think I probably always did. And my first foray into acting was at age six, when I played a very small role as a young boy in a local play near where I lived in Plymouth, just north of Wellington. Senegalian Spring, I think was the name of the play. I might be wrong on that, but it was a, you know, tiny little theatre that really left an impression on me, and particularly my older sister Una. She was very much into acting, and I think I've maybe told the story before, but she wanted to partake in a local production of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and my sister, younger sister Lizzie as well. So they went in to do the audition, and I was left to kind of sit in the car, and because I was at that point not keen to partake, and then I got a little bit bored and wandered in, and I don't think there was any other young boys at the audition, so I ended up getting the role of Charlie.
Wow.
And then after that, I really enjoyed that experience, and my mum happened to have as a patient a local talent agent or acting agent, and she thought, well, why not, you know, just get some photos taken. And I think from there I was just lucky enough to end up getting a few auditions for William Tell and then The Tribe, and the rest kind of came from there. So
you really brought to life the character Jack, Mike, and you, was it a fun time for you looking back? I mean, when you you know, how was it? The listeners are always intrigued to know what was life like for you on the tribe when we were filming it.
Look, it was. I had the most fondest of memories, I have to say, of that time. I mean, I was just 14 and a half, I think, when that all began, and you know, I was at an all boys school, and I had it's fair to say, I think, probably quite a sheltered upbringing, and the tribe just really, I mean, it was so immediately obvious that it was a very unique experience. I still remember learning that I got the part. I still remember that day quite vividly. It was my sister Una took the phone call, and it was we were at home in my kitchen, and I just kind of got the sense that it was going to change my life in ways that I probably couldn't have foreseen. But that whole time was fantastic, I have to say. I mean, just getting to know all the crew and the cast, you know, there are still some friendships that endure all these years later. And, I mean, it was silly. There were aspects of it that were really surreal, you know. I mean, all of the attention that came about as a result, but I remember knowing that it was still a distinctly family-like experience. I mean, I know you've used that term, and I agree wholeheartedly with it. It was, I always felt that people stayed grounded, and I think I probably had a bit of a, looking back, I think I was probably really conscious of not wanting to let the experience change who I was. And I think in some ways I was maybe initially uncomfortable with the attention a little bit. I mean, walking around with red hair in Wellington, I remember, you know, you'd get some snide remarks from people, and but that was very much the minority. I think for the most part, it was such a positive experience, and really shaped, I think, a lot of who I am. I can't see how someone who didn't spend all that time on that film set couldn't have been shaped by it. But yeah, like any positive experience, I think the thing that I most treasure out of it is the friendships that you know, I still maintain for the most part today. And it's funny, you know, I mean, in Auckland it was great, you know, seeing Tony and Victoria and Beth. You know, we're all kind of around the same age, so we were going through the same kind of life experiences, you know, becoming, you know, getting married, 21st birthday parties, becoming parents for the first time.
That's interesting. I kind of endorse exactly what you're saying, Mike. It's, you know, I feel that, like, I always felt like the father of the tribe, you know, but now I'm the grandfather of the tribe, and you guys are the father and the parents, but it is like a family, and it is very special. And I know we always say it. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to have had some successes with other shows, but nothing is really emotionally connected to the fans around the world like the tribe. And I think it's testament to yourselves, who the cast. I'm very proud of the cast and crew. Brought it all together, and you'll, all the listeners will hear, just speaking with Mike, how some of the other interviews, Mike, I was saying I didn't just cast people for their talent, but there's another element that I call the spirit, and that you're lovely, you know, genuine human beings, and so well done. I think it was I'm very pleased that it formed a part of your early kind of life, and that you can draw on those experiences even today. Mike, did you get recognized when you were a lawyer by any chance in the UK? Did anybody say that lawyer looks a bit familiar?
It's always an interesting, the question of being recognized is always a fascinating one. It pops up at the most strangest of places. I think it's fair to say I never looked, I don't think, as distinct as, you know, cast members like Meryl, who always had you know, with her braided hair, she was instantly recognizable. But yeah, definitely. Even now, I get messages on Facebook and Twitter from fans, and all these years later, and it speaks to, you know, what you've talked about in terms of the lasting impression the show seems to have had on people who watched it and who were, like we were, teenagers all those years ago, and now, you know, are adults. And I'm just trying to think of the last. I mean, I still also get letters. I'll never forget that. I remember my mum was contacted when I was in London. A German lady had come out to New Zealand to try and meet me, I think, and the closest she could get was to have coffee with my mum. which I think that was an achievement of sorts. But yeah, honestly, it never ceased to amaze me, the lengths and the interest that it generated, and still does.
And Mike, you would have, when you went in some of the original tours, you formed a big part of the tours when we'd do the tours and go around the world. And again, for the listeners, in New Zealand, which is a very special place, a very small country, and celebrity isn't the same, really. I mean, now that Peter Jackson has opened it up and James Cameron filming down there, it's become almost like a mini Hollywood. But we weren't even broadcast in New Zealand for a while. So you would go on a plane on tour and arrive there to screaming fans. And how was that for you as a young person? I mean, it must have blown your mind, I guess.
Definitely blew my mind. That was so surreal. And again, like, I think I was when it happened for the first time, again, you kind of were conscious that this was not an everyday experience. And I still remember the kind of adrenaline rush that I got from just the energy that those gatherings would, that was present there. It was just, like you say, New Zealand celebrity has different interpretations than it did when we went overseas. I think there was a level of enthusiasm and passion for the show that just was, you had to be amongst it to really believe it. But I remember thinking, crikey, I'm never going to forget it. And I don't. I mean, there are memories that you have in life that are so vivid because I think of the impact that they had on you. And I mean, I can still, my memories of those tours, which in each of them were a matter of weeks, I still remember large parts of them. And, you know, that's often a feature of the messages that I get will be people saying, do you remember I met you at such and such? And more often than not, I can recall it. So it has left an indelible mark.
Isn't that lovely? That's very special. So I've got some questions now, Mike. I'm going to go to our Thrive official Facebook page and read them. I should say to the listeners, we, as Mike said, we get a lot of messages and we've got hundreds and hundreds here. So forgive me if I'm not able in our time allotted to get to everybody's questions. So I'll do a kind of a lucky dip in a random sample. So sorry if I can't get to them all, but I'll do my best. So now, Mike, this is one from, I'm trying to pronounce her name, Ellen Hastbacks-Carrison. So there's a three-part question. Hi, Michael. You portrayed my favorite character on the show, so I'm naturally a bit curious about what your life is like, especially now, so many years after the show has ended. What is your idea of a perfect day at work? Do you ever miss acting? What is your favorite TV series currently or of all time, aside from The Tribe, of course? So there's three questions in there, Mike, if you could
give it. Three-part answer.
Yeah.
So I think for me, in respect to the first part, what's an ideal day at work? As corny as it may sound, I've always tried to work in jobs where I get to help people. So if I feel I've been able to help somebody, that's a successful day at work for me. Life is now, I suppose, comparatively quite ordinary, normal, as it was for those amazing few years that I, working as an actor on The Tribe. But I no less enjoy my current life. I, as I mentioned earlier, have a lovely wife and a beautiful daughter and a couple of dogs. So I just need to paint my fence and I'll have a white picket fence. So that's great. What am I watching now? I'm a massive consumer of Netflix. Favorite TV series, I'm a big I still really enjoy my documentaries. My wife has managed to convince me to watch some TV series that I otherwise naturally wouldn't have been found appealing, but things like The Sopranos, West Wing, The Wire, which are all a little bit dated now, I suppose. But yeah, anything. I'm a big fan of true crime series. I was a big fan of Making a Murderer, that type of genre. So yeah,
it's interesting. Well done. That got another one here now from Sophie Bright. Good morning, Sophie. Hey, Michael. Loved Jack's character. Jack would utilize his abilities to help the tribe, but very rarely would ask or want help. Why was this? And also part two of that. What one of Jack's inventions would you want in an apocalyptic world?
I suppose the first question, and Ray, you can correct me given Jack was very much your creation. I think his ego prevented assistance. as watchers can remember, there were many scenes with Jack and Dal in which Jack was often very disregarding of Dal's otherwise very good advice and assistance. So But I like to think that what started off as a hardened ego born of having lived in the mall, much of it on his own, he softened as he matured. And I think that's an accurate description of his evolution.
I would agree with that very much so, Mike. And if I may say, you as an actor brought a lovely, I mean, although we and myself and Harry and the writers, we would come up with the storylines or give you the words, so to speak, all the cast, you brought your own nuances and I think you gave some great layers there, Mike, to the character and nice humor and for all of the kind of, the egotistical, it was softened a bit. And there was a great empathy, I mean, a great innovation. Jack always thought was very inventive and innovative and creative in that way. And what about an invention do you have any idea of any invention you would want in an apocalyptic world?
Well, look, I have to say, in all honesty, Jack's capabilities as a DIY person or a do-it-yourself person stand in stark contrast to my own. For me, a great success is changing the light bulb, whereas Jack was obviously much more capable. I suppose the first invention that sticks in my mind is one of the first that were featured in the series, and that was a functioning water filter and generator. I feel that you can never have too much use of those inventions. So in answer to that question, I think, a functioning water filter and generator would probably be my answer to that.
Yeah, that's a good good segue, Mike. And you mentioned Dal, and we've got a segue into an interesting question from Gemma Wood. Hi, Gemma. So I'll just read this for Mike. Hi, Ray and Michael. Michael, you played my favorite character from The Tribe. What was your most funniest bit working with Ashwar, who played Dal? And do you still keep in touch with him? Also, would you go back into doing TV again? Acting, I guess she means, Mike.
Yeah. No, look, I'm just thinking back now. I have lots of funny memories of working with Ash, as I called him. Often the greatest challenge, particularly maybe for us when we were younger, was trying not to laugh off camera and put somebody off. That was always, it was similar to if anyone listening has ever been sat in a school assembly and you know, you're under strict orders not to talk out of turn, and it can sometimes be hard to constrain a laugh, or particularly if somebody's told you a funny story. So that was often a feature of my scenes with Ash, was trying to bring the seriousness that certain scenes required. And Ash always had a fantastic sense of humour. I do keep in contact with Ash every now and then through social media. I think I understand he's got a young family of his own and is doing incredibly well. I think he's a scientist of some description.
Yeah, very much so, yeah. He's very, very, he's gone into science, so that's extraordinary.
He's living up to his character's aspirations, I'm sure. But as to the last question, I suppose you never say never. I suppose it's my answer, really. Absolutely, I suppose if the right opportunity came up and I got the green light from my wife, who knows?
Yeah, no, that's good. You never ever know. I mean, one thing on that we've been developing various sequels and movie tie-ins, and I wouldn't want to do one unless it was done the right way, and I would want the cast to come back. And so who knows? I mean, even 10, 20 years later, I think it would be a compelling and a very interesting storyline. Some other questions here, Mike. So one from Sharon Tyler. Hi, Michael. Watching The Tribe was a big part of my childhood and introduced me to my love of post-apocalyptic TV shows, films, and books. What is your preferred film, TV, or book genre? And which film, TV, or book is your favorite? Hope you're doing well. So do you have a favorite film or TV show or book that you're enjoying, Mike?
No, look, firstly, thank you for the question, Sharon. I'd say my favorite film is Forrest Gump. For the longest time, however much older I get, I still come back to that film as being one of my favorite. I was always a bit of a military history buff, so Saving Private Ryan always had was always another favorite film. So if I had to nominate two, it would probably be those.
That's good. And Mike, we were chatting earlier. You were saying how much you've been enjoying reading the tribe books, and we must be careful. I mean, so not all people have read them in the fan base, so for spoilers. But you've enjoyed how the characters evolved in the novels.
Yeah, no, it's always been it's something I've always been naturally curious about. Of course, you know, was to see what then happened to my character after the the period captured by the TV series finished. It's been quite interesting to watch it develop and imagine myself in those and the situations described in the book. And I've just been really pleased that those storylines have been able to continue. It's just fantastic that, you know, people who have enjoyed following the series and the characters' journeys have been able to, you know, watch them continue to grow.
Yeah, no, that's great, Mike. Well done. So let's see. I'm just going to another question. Bear with me. Well, this one now from James Ortega, who's asking about Atlantis High. So Atlantis High is just Jack's paradise program. He was too smart to let the program really track his mind. I suppose people are talking about the Ram and his paradise and that. But so Atlantis High, Mike, how was that for you playing Giles?
Look, it was as enjoyable, I have to say. I remember the first day of filming having a bit of a mini panic attack because I'd been obviously so used to playing a particular type of character, and then I just worried that I wasn't up to fulfilling another character's role. But no, look, I enjoyed it really for all the same reasons that I enjoyed the tribe. I mean, a lot of the crew were the same, so that helped me. They helped to put me at ease. But I really loved the quirky humour that was a feature of Atlantis. And I, if I think back, it had its own particular humour, which I really enjoyed at the time and still do looking back. I mean, I just think some of those scenes were absolutely classic. The sheer kind of imagination, I think, that went into Atlantis High. I mean, I think the tribe it's all on its own in terms of, you know, completely different kind of universe. But Atlantis High was equally kind of amazing to open it with a new script and see where the storyline took you.
You know, I mean, I had the pleasure actually in those early, had the pleasure of directing you, Mike, in the first three episodes I directed. And I remember the first days and it was kind of just weird. I mean, people in New Zealand say that's out there. I mean, that was really out there. And at the time, I mean, I think I was drinking too much Pinot Noir when I dreamt that up, but it was a fun series, and ironically, rather like the tribe. I mean, if the tribe is a cult underground classic, with a fanatical audience, I mean, the Atlantis High is growing its own cult following. I think it was either way ahead of its time or in another parallel universe, but it was certainly quirky. And again, I have to say, you brought a wonderful quirkiness and played it so well, Mike Giles, and a lot of the tribe cast, a lot of the tribe cast were in the series, and as you say, it was kind of familiar, but it was just 26 episodes of craziness and where I could let my imagination run wild, and I know that people would stare wide-eyed when they'd read the script, so it was a lot of fun. But it's interesting. I got an interesting question from David Cullen about this, and says, "Hey guys, I think the biggest strength of Atlantis High would be how weird and crazy it was. However, I also think that would be its biggest weakness because it really made it ahead of its time. Would you agree?"
Yeah, I mean, I think everything about Elenda's High kind of defied conventional thinking. You know, I mean, it just, it was, I liked its sheer audacity in terms of its conception and its delivery. And I think, you know, because there was so much people involved with the tribe that were also involved in that, I think it was, you got a distinct sense that it was just a real, it was just a lot of fun. You know, I mean, the tribe was fun, but, you know, it obviously dealt with some pretty serious, heavy subject matter. And I think Atlantis High provided a kind of escapism for the crew and cast that worked on it. And, you know, it was just a real fun show to work on in every way. And I think that lightness was a real tonic. Personally for me, you know, at that time in my life. But also, yeah, I got that sense from the cast and the crew, who I think they kind of enjoyed, you know, thinking, like, you think when you first read a script, you think, crikey, how's that going to work? You know, and then really enjoying having it, you know, bringing it to life. And you know, there was some really, another feature of the tribe, of Atlantis High, of course, was getting to work with some of New Zealand's most respected and experienced actors, and seeing some of them have to step out of their comfort zone and take on these really quirky, crazy characters, but really enjoy it in the process. You know, obviously Ray Henwood and sadly, you know, he's no longer with us, but I learned so much from him, but it was always quite enjoyable for me to see, you know, although Ray at that stage was probably in his 60s, or if not older, you know, you could just see how much he enjoyed playing this completely random character. And it was such a rare opportunity, I think, for people just to kind of let their creative imagination kind of run wild, really.
That's what it was. I mean, we just kind of, I mean, that was the intention on it, really. It was, I think The Tribe, again, was a fun series in many ways. But as you rightly said, Mike, we were dealing with a lot of very important issues, themes of, you know, social, you know, interaction and kind of all very, very major issues. So it was a nice contrast, really. And interesting, some of the listeners may not have seen the series. And I think the team here have got a lot of them on YouTube, and they're freely available, but also on our Vimeo channel. So anybody that's inclined to check it out if you haven't seen it, and I think it'll bring some joy and if you're kind of isolated and you want to escape, this is certainly an escape. I mean, Atlantis, I'll take you to another planet almost.
Yes, it does resemble planet Earth, but I think it is its own planet, that's for sure.
I've got another question, Mike, from Mark James. Good morning, Mark. Who is your friends on set? I know you're still friends with Cassius on. You've answered part of that, but...
Yeah. Look, I think that was one of the good things about the show, and I'm not just saying it because it would sound convenient for me to say it, but no, I think genuinely everyone got on. I mean, it was, you know, there was a wide range of ages. You know, I mean, I think the youngest cast members when we first started, you know, were 8 or 9 years of age, and there was 17 and 18-year-olds. And but, yeah, I mean, I think, I suppose not surprisingly, I became really close with, you know, cast members that were around my age, you know, Ryan Runciman, Antonia Preble, Victoria Spence, Beth, Ash, Dwayne, Danny, Caleb, you know, yeah, I mean, it was just such a, I mean, everyone remembers the friends they had at school, and everyone, I think, remembers their time at school, and for most, you know, it's a really enjoyable part of your life as you kind of grow, and for me, that filming experience was kind of like parallel to my schooling time, and yeah, I mean, I think we all just really got on. It was just, you know, we're all kind of found ourselves in this really, you know, unusual situation, and it really cemented yeah, again, like I mentioned earlier, friendships that have just, I think, will last a lifetime.
That's great. That we've got another question here, Mike. So this is from Hayden Chelfire. How often did you have to dye your hair for the role?
Well, viewers may have noticed my hair underwent an evolution, like the character, over the five series. Initially, it was fully orange, and that was a regular touch-up job. You hear about people who dye their hair having to get their roots touched up, and that was a relatively common thing, say maybe every couple of weeks. And of course, my natural hair is dark brown, so to convert it to and maintain it as a fiery orange meant there was a lot of work that went into that. It's something that I remember mentioning in some of my first interviews with the tribe when I was a teenager was, you know, the experience of waking up and having dyed my pillowcases a bright orange. And I learned to keep my head away from surfaces after a recent dye job. It was not a painting job that my parents appreciated, I think, in those early days. I now know what it's like, you know, to have my head, because often it was a three-stage process. I had to have my hair dyed completely blonde, which was interesting, and then they would apply the dye. It was certainly a process to work through.
That's great. Mike, I got one now from, and forgive me if I'm not pronouncing your name correct, but it's Bams Gopford. What's the most important thing that you learned from the tribe?
Friendship. That's the first thing that popped into my mind. The importance of friendship. And I think that was, I suppose, the backdrop against which the tribe kind of played out on was, you know, the like we are now in kind of uncertain times. And the main means by which you coped and got on with things was the relationships you formed with cast members. And of course that was as much as true on screen as it was off screen, as we've kind of touched on. But I think the importance of human relationships and the support you can derive from those. So, yeah, I think that's kind of what just intuitively pops into my mind in answer to that question.
Oh, that's a good answer, Mike, and I totally agree with you. I mean, particularly at this time, and as you rightly say, in uncertain times, there's a lot of anxious people out there, naturally so, and some very frightened, some very vulnerable. And really, it is a time where we do need to rely on one another and to be there and to value what truly is of value. And that's our friends, our family, our loved ones. And for the sake of it, I mean, this is a great leveler, really, isn't it? Where, you know, we kind of often lose sight of what it's all about, the meaning of life and existence. But in the end, it's to love and give love and receive love and to be there in whatever form. Otherwise, we're kind of dysfunctional. So, I mean, do you have a message, Mike, for anybody who is in lockdown? And really, it's, I suppose, and any kind of tips you could give for those who are maybe a bit frightened and anxious?
Yeah, look, I think it's really just explore your relationships with the people that you're in isolation with. I think, particularly with social media and everything else, there is such a natural tendency for people to kind of fall into silos and get rather introverted, if that's the right word. I think never, and the other thing with social media is it gives you every opportunity not to, to just have contact with people over Messenger or text message. And it means that you kind of sometimes forget, you know, what you can derive from just actually even just having a phone conversation or a face-to-face conversation with somebody. I think at the end of the day, that's kind of the most rewarding thing, you, part of the human experience, without sounding too kind of high-minded. I think it's, if anything, the opportunity provided by isolation is the chance to, revigorate or, existing relationships. You know, it's kind of, I suppose it's one of the unexpected consequences of things like this, is that it forces not just families and groups of friends, but wider society to kind of reimagine things. You know, the world has kind of come to a pause, and you can't help but stop and rethink how we've lived our lives to date. And so I think probably my best advice is, pick up the phone. Don't be self-conscious about asking for help or giving help. It's often an assumption that prevents us from making the most basic human overture, which is just to say, ask people how they are.
That's great advice, Mike. I really do, and I endorse that entirely. It's very, very important, and not to be, as you say, not to be self-conscious or embarrassed. And it's not a sign of weakness. I think it's a sign of strength, really. And now more than ever before, this is a time where we have to be there for each other, and friends, family, and even strangers. I mean, just we're all, there's a collective consciousness around the world. And it's not a war, but it is. It's a time, as you say, it's a time to pause and reflect and to maybe take issue and say, do we need to be living our lives in a different way, I think?
Yeah, look, I think, one of the greatest circumstances in which, amazing friendships are formed are shared experiences, which is the story of me as having been an actor on The Tribe. You know, that was a shared experience, which has a way of, drawing you close to people who are experiencing alongside you. And there's not that many occasions in our lives where, whole countries have had to have one shared experience. I mean, it's sadly often associated with wartime, but, this is one of those opportunities where, everyone is kind of, having a shared experience beyond what we normally can talk about, and that's the weather, That's often the only thing you have in common. But I think there's a real... it seems it'll be an inevitable consequence of this whole thing worldwide, wherever you may be listening to this, that it's a timely reminder of people, to lift their head up off the smartphone and look around and be conscious of, like you said, that sense of collective concern or anxiety, but also knowing that societies wherever you are will only be the richer for having come through it.
Yeah, I agree again entirely. And that's interesting, the themes of The Tribe. I mean, my aspiration is, I know I keep saying, but it's very profound and pertinent now, that it was really to, it was positive, aspirational, not dystopian, apocalyptic, not doom and gloom, but to build a better and new sustainable world and to have hope for a better future. For your children, my children, my grandchildren, your grandchildren, and for all of our listeners, it's all about the future. What kind of world will future generations inhabit? And this is a time for us to maybe think about that and to, in the end of the day, it doesn't matter what your bank, but I mean, yeah, with it, I mean, money doesn't bring happiness, a lack of money brings unhappiness. And I feel sorry and concerned there'll be a lot of people out there who are, I mean, not just frightened from a health point of view, but for their fiscal health and how they support their families, a lot of unemployment, the economy. But I mean, I think probably it's to live each day, isn't it? And not to feed anxieties and to take it one step at a time, but never lose hope. And as you say, we can all, I believe there's always, we'll get through it. And Mike, just one thing that I didn't touch on, and you mentioned coming back to the interview, and it's amazing how fast this, we're over our hour, so I'll not keep you too much longer, but you mentioned you had a career change after your legal, you then became a journalist. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I saw it as a kind of an opportunity to kind of continue what I was doing in law, except on a kind of a wider scope. And so I suppose most of my journalism kind of centered around, I suppose, social justice issues or people who were in a particular predicament that, you know, were seeking answers. And sometimes the media can be a force for good in that sense. And so I worked for about 5 years with News Hub here in New Zealand, and principally on a political current affairs show. And it was, again, another great opportunity to, you know, to meet people that I otherwise wouldn't have come across in my day-to-day life, you know, and was able to explore, again, going back to the tribe, many of the issues that we covered in that show. And I ended up in many stories, often filming the stories myself, which from a creative point of view, I found really satisfying. And, you know, for me, it's always interesting being on the other end of in an interview situation, being the one answering questions as opposed to asking them. And can I say, Ray, you know, just from a personal point of view, I think you conducted the interview very professionally.
Thank you.
You know, if you're ever considering a career change, you know, I could give you...
I might just take up on that, it's... Yeah, it's a very, very surreal to be asking. Normally I'm answering the questions as you are in the cast, and I've enjoyed it very much, Mike. And I know that our tribal brothers and sisters around the world will have been very grateful and appreciate you taking the time to have a chat, and it will mean a lot to them. And interesting, really, that we I was mentioning I wanted to do a kind of a bit of a reunion on my vineyard, getting the cast and team together. And, you know, little did I know that on our 20th anniversary that we would all be kind of reconnecting and in at this particular time and under these circumstances. But, you know, we'll have the reunion once this kind of social distancing stops, you know, and we get back to normal. And Mike, in closing, is there anything you'd like to say in addition to any of our listeners?
Look, I just wanted to say a massive thank you to those that have, you know, that supported the show and continue to show an interest. You know, it's always really humbling to know that, you know, you get messages from people about the difference that a particular character or storyline may have had in their own lives, and it makes you realise, you know, it was more than just entertainment. You know, for some people it was a form of education and provided some form of guidance. So I just want to say, you know, a massive thank you to all of the people who continue to, you know, support the show. And of course, massive thank you to Ray and your family. It's I always really enjoy the opportunity to, you know, revisit that time in my life. And like you say, hopefully when all this craziness is die down, we can kind of, you know, meet physically all in the same place and, you know, introduce you to the extended whānau.
No, I look forward to that, Mike, very much. And much love to you and your lovely wife and your little girl. You take care, good care of her and take good care of yourself, Mike. And to all our listeners, you keep the dream alive, as we say, and onwards and upwards, and we'll all get through this. So all the very best to you and much love to you all. And thank you once again, Mike, for taking the time. And we'll catch up again very, very soon.
Right. Well, thank you so much. And do give my regards to all the family.
I sure will. Lots of love. All the best. Bye-bye for now. Bye-bye.